The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh on the 9 till noon show with you until 12 noon today. As the name suggests, as myself and Lee were saying before the news there with Michaela, today is World Radio Day. And it's a day when I suppose we reflect on the impact radio has made on all our lives, and it's a pleasure for us to be here to provide the service for you, and hopefully we can do it well. If you want to take part in the show today, or indeed any day, you can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call 074 91 25000. If you're outside of the dialing area, it's 00353 749 125000. You can contact us via social media. We're at Highland Radio on X, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, we're across other social media platforms as well, and we are of course broadcasting the show live on YouTube, on Highland Radio Ireland, and also on our Facebook pages, and you can see the show unfold in any Zoom conversations or studio guests. You can watch those on your various devices through whatever means you have of Chromecasting or watching directly, or all this wonderful, newfangled, modern stuff that we didn't even think about vaguely existing when we were younger. We'll start, as always, with the papers this morning. Irish Independent: nurse allowances in public sector pay deal sweeteners. Sweeteners for groups of public servants that include extra pay hikes and allowances in a proposed new national pay deal will cost an estimated €47 million. The fine print of the agreement reveals numerous government commitments to benefit some state employees on top of across-the-board pay rises. It includes a pledge to roll out 3 Labour Court recommendations that would mean significant benefits for nurses and midwives, medical laboratory scientists and HSE managers. Also on the front of the Irish Independent, a very harrowing photograph of 2 women in Gaza. The banner line under it: horror in southern Gaza as 74 are killed, including women and children, during operation to save 2 hostages. And if ever there was an entire news story summed up in one photograph in one sentence, that's it. The Irish Times this morning: HSE aims to cut €250 million spending on outside agency staff. Plans could increase risk of interruptions to key services, especially next winter. The chief executive will halve the number of top managers in switch to regionalisation. Now, this is an interesting one because on the one hand, we do know that the HSE incurs significant agency costs, and we've seen reports in recent weeks, indeed in the Northwest and in Letterkenny, of significant agency costs both at Letterkenny University Hospital and also in the community health sector right across Donegal, Leitrim, Sligo, Cavan, Monaghan, etc. as well. And on the one hand, yes, indeed, you can say an awful lot of money is being spent. If we stopped bringing in all these agency staff, then we will save all that money. And that's absolutely true. However, the other side of that coin is, of course, that the reason the agency staff are being brought in is to do a job, and it's to work, be they agency nurses working in the various wards or ED or whatever, or be they agency physios or agency speech therapists or agency whatevers. The fact is, those being brought in on an agency basis are being brought in to do jobs that need doing. If the agency staff aren't brought in and they don't hire sufficient staff to make the agency staff unnecessary, then the work isn't going to get done. So you have this dichotomy that the HSE is going to have to address. Do we go on a big money-saving exercise to get within budget? That's quite possible. Cutting agency absolutely will bring them closer to hitting their budget. But in doing so, it could stop countless operations, stop countless procedures, stop countless services being delivered. And that is one of the many issues that the health minister and the new regional health bodies are going to be dealing with. Tony Ganavan, who currently heads up SEALTA, is going to be the head of the new regional office serving the Northwest. Surge in Garda applications after age cap is raised to 50. There's been a surge in the number of people expressing interest in joining on Garda Síochána, according to Conor Lally, who was writing in the Irish Times this morning. Of the total of 6,381 applicants received under the latest recruitment round, around 2,300 are aged between 35 and 49, and that's 2,300 that wouldn't have been eligible under previous recruitment drives. So that's an interesting issue indeed. Are we going to see more older Gardaí appointed. And that's an interesting one, because it also means that if you have people joining on Garda Síochána who are older, you also have people joining on Garda Síochána who'll have experience in other areas of life. They may have worked in a bank, they may have worked in retail, they may have worked on a farm, they may have worked in a hospital. But you'll get people joining on Garda Síochána who have experience elsewhere. And whereas traditionally a lot of people would have left school or left college, done the Garda exams, gone to Temple Moor, gone out, and you'll have people who perhaps have never done any other job in their life except be a member of An Garda Síochána. So if you have older people who have life experience in other areas now joining An Garda Síochána, perhaps 20 years experience in another job, that will be interesting and may give them a new perspective, and it'll be interesting to see how that changes things on the ground, if at all. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Now, you've heard Cathal Gould on the news this morning already, expressing his belief that Sinn Féin want to see a exchequer programme to replace the TV licence and an amnesty for those who have not paid their licence up to now and are potentially facing court proceedings. Well, the main headline in the Irish Daily Mail: Varadkar rejects SF's stunt of TV licence amnesty. Leo says move is a slap in the face for those who have paid up. A Sinn Féin amnesty would be a slap in the face to law-abiding citizens. The Taoiseach has said the opposition party will today table a Dáil motion calling on the government to abolish the licence fee and replace it instead with direct funding from the Exchequer. And that's going to be a very interesting debate to see how that one pans out. Because indeed, I can see a situation develop where people go, oi, hang on a minute, I have paid my licence every year. I have had my licence tucked in under my television every year for the past number of years. And it's almost a prodigal son again. You know, why should I now be sidelined and people that didn't be told, that's okay then, on you go, you're grand. It's going to be an interesting debate, and that's going to give it a whole new dimension. Let's move on to the Red Tops. Irish Daily Mirror this morning: ban the bullies, dangerous dogs clampdown. Now, I must be honest, I am no expert on dogs. I hadn't heard of XL bullies until a tragic case in the UK in the past couple of weeks where a lady actually lost her life. But Ireland should follow the UK in banning unpredictable XL bullies, as they have the potential to kill. Leitrim Council Veterinary Officer James Madden added, the breed is widespread here and many are in the hands of wrong owners. There's a picture. Now, obviously, pictures can be framed and crafted in such a way as to increase the menace, but there's a dog on the front of the Mirror this morning, and certainly I wouldn't be patting it, and if I saw that coming against me, I would be bricking it, as the man said. Irish Daily Star this morning: car thief jailed over death, you left him to die on road. A callous car thief who killed a vehicle owner by driving off with him on the bonnet has been jailed for 9.5 years. Adam Murphy, 22, left Ian MacDonald, 50, dying on the roadway as he fled. A judge said yesterday he's been jailed for 9 years. And the €4 billion kiss. Every paper, it seems, today has a picture of Taylor Swift kissing... is it Travis Kelce is his name? I think it's Travis Kelce or something. He's a footballer with the Kansas City Chiefs, and they won the Super Bowl in a dramatic extra time touchdown on Sunday night stroke Monday morning. Irish Sun: Aussie rockers in first ever croaker gig, Highway to Hill 16, Bally Back in Black. It's a pun fest on the Irish Sun this morning. AC/DC are to play in Croke Park, and it'll clash with the Electric Picnic on the same weekend. Now, I raised my eyebrows when I saw that, actually, because I always thought traditionally the Electric Picnic was on the first weekend in September. And one of the reasons it was on the first weekend in September, it was on sort of after schools went back, with the intention of attracting a slightly older clientele. Now, mind you, Electric Picnic started at the same time that Oxygen was also a thing in Fairy House, and I think the idea was that Electric Picnic, or Punchestown as it later became, the Electric Picnic was sort of intended to be almost something different, an alternative to Oxygen, where Oxygen was seen as the festival where young people went and Electric Picnic was seen as the festival where adults went. Now, if Picnic has moved into mid-August, I presume they're sort of trying to go more in toward the mainstream. But I digress. AC/DC playing in Croke Park, and that gig is on in August 17th, as we said, and the tickets go on sale on Friday. I don't know, maybe not. I was at the last two AC/DC gigs. I saw them in the Aviva some years ago, and then I was in Punchestown on a rainy, teeming day where AC/DC played, and it was a brilliant gig. And I'll be honest, the gig in the pouring rain out in the field in Punchestown, actually, I thought was much better than the gig under the cover of a stand when it wasn't raining. Just, it was, there was a moment where Angus got up on a cherry picker to do the solo for Let There Be Rock in the middle of the crowd. And the rain was teeming, and there was a Super Trooper light just shining straight on him. And you could just see Angus, and you could see the rain pouring down. And he was just in another world, eyes closed, schoolboy cap on, just jamming out the solo to Let There Be Rock. It was just one of those iconic, wonderful live moments. Absolutely loved it. If you haven't seen AC/DC, it's well worth it. They're a little past their prime, let's be honest, but still a great, great band. It sort of worries me when I think about it. I was wanting to go see AC/DC when I was 17 in school. That's how long they have been around now. 16 minutes past nine, we're going to take a short break. Coming back in a moment, we'll be discussing a very important issue, that of adult education and how those who provide adult education are paid. You welcome back to Highland Radio's 9 till noon show on a Tuesday morning. Adult education is a very important service and is vital for very many people. Adult education tutors, however, are demanding parity with post-primary colleagues. They're calling for supporters to join them in a protest tomorrow, February 14th, on Kildare Street in Dublin. A letter making a number of points with regards to their pay and conditions has been sent to Minister Simon Harris, joined on Zoom by James O'Keefe, who is the chair of the Adult Education Teachers Organisation. James, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
James, in terms of the situation that adult education tutors are in at the moment, you have had a long discussion with government. In May of last year, you finally got the government to agree a public service contract with an incremental pay scale. But you're saying what was actually on the table from the government was, to say the least, ambiguous.
It was ambiguous, and there was a good few aspects of that contract that would be unacceptable to us. The proposed contract, you know, went back to government. Our union representatives, you know, could see that it wouldn't be acceptable. So it went back for clarification on a few points. There was one major aspect of the contract that was a breach of employment law. It was a breach of the Part-Time Working Act, which states that, you know, part-time workers will be treated no less favourably than their full-time counterparts. So our understanding is that that element of the contract proposal, you know, has been changed. As far as we're concerned, the original proposal, it went no way really towards the kind of contract that we would want and that we would be happy with, and we don't really think, we don't expect that the kind of drastic changes to that contract proposal that would make the proposal acceptable to us are going to be forthcoming.
In terms of your membership, how many would be working full time? How many would be working on a part time basis at night or during the day?
Good question. I don't have it to hand, I'm afraid. We have carried out surveys, you know, gleaning that kind of information, but I don't have it to hand.
Is there a perception, perhaps at department level, perhaps I won't say at ministerial level, but you know, a perception that maybe an adult education teacher is someone who does a couple of hours down at the local college at night in their spare time, and it isn't necessarily regarded as a career, it's regarded as a nice handy little learner or something to do with an evening in the winter?
Yeah, I think you've touched on something there. Yeah, there is definitely that kind of perception, and you know, like the vast majority of us don't really recognise that. We don't recognise that. You know, there are a number of people who do a few hours here and a few hours there, but you know, for the vast majority of people, it's a career. You know, it's a career that they treat with kind of professionalism and dedication. And we want, you know, we just want a proper contract that will reflect that professionalism and that dedication.
from your point of view, discussions, as we say, have been ongoing. You did reach that draft agreement per se in May, but as you say, there are issues with it that have yet to be addressed. Any indication coming from the department, from the minister, that they're willing to get to grips with the issues that you have?
No. So, that is the Adult Education Teachers Organisation. We're made up of TUI members, SIPTU members and non-union members alike. You know, we had no involvement in those talks, those discussions. There is a tendency amongst the trade union officials, the trade union bureaucracy, to offer reassurance to their membership that, you know, we'll look after this. You know, you don't need to get involved. And we're not happy with that.
Yeah.
Our protest tomorrow, it's multifaceted, and it has a few different purposes. One purpose is to put the government on notice. It's to say to the government, we're not happy with this. The alignment that's being offered to us is to be aligned with the Youth Reach resource person contract. We're not saying that we're any better than Youth Reach resource persons. We're saying that was a bad deal for Youth Reach, and it would be a bad deal for us. The next message for our protest tomorrow is to say to our union officials that, you know, we want you to be more ambitious. We want you to be more optimistic about the willingness of your membership to actually put up a fight. We want a fighting trade union movement, standing up for its members. We have membership of about, you know, just under 400 tutors. And this is it's a vibrant and enthusiastic and effective campaign. Mm. And you know, we want our union officials to look at that and say, oh, here's a big cohort of workers who that we would love to have as members of our union. So, you know, why are the union officials not jumping in there and offering something to those people who aren't already union members, but maybe who've been made a bit cynical by years of inaction by trade union bureaucracies? You know, why are they not offering something to those that would make union membership attractive to those people? And the last thing, Greg, is we're also saying very clearly to adult education tutors all over the country who aren't involved in our campaign that this contract is coming down the line. We're not under any illusion that protests outside Government House are going to change, are going to radically change that. On the other hand, like it is our protests that have brought us to this point. It was our protests that forced the government to finally offer us that contract and pay scale, even though it's not acceptable to us. But we're saying to adult education tutors all around the country that if you really want a decent contract that reflects properly, truly reflects your work, get involved in our campaign, come to the protest tomorrow and look at stepping up the campaign, because that's really what we're going to need to do if we're going to win a contract that really reflects the work that we do.
Rather than be tied to various unions and dependent on the unions, be they TUI, be they SIPTU, be they whoever, rather than depend on them to negotiate on your behalf, because with all the best will in the world, I mean, I think the TUI is going to go out there, and first and foremost, the TUI is going to be fighting for full-time teachers who work in the secondary sector. That's their bread and butter. That's the bulk of their membership, and that's what's going to be foremost on the TUI's mind. And with all due respect to that union, I'm not sure how much thought the union is going to be given to adult education tutors in the course of the minutiae of negotiations around the table when talking about a public sector pay agreement. Is it time for the Adult Education Teachers Organisation to become a negotiating body in its own right and to actually negotiate in your own deal with the Department of Education and the government based on the fact that you have specific circumstances, you have specific needs and you have specific issues that are not going to be addressed in a catch-all discussion?
I think that would be a long way down the line. You know, we would encourage people to join the existing unions. And we really, you know, it's a fight that can be won. You know, we'd encourage people to get in there, get to their branch meetings, get to their section meetings, put in motions for Congress, put in motions to be to be adopted by their local branch, and you know, and fight to turn the existing unions into to become part of a fighting trade union movement, which really this country is badly in need of. I mean, if we look at if we look up at the north even, and we look at the great, pretty much general public service strike that they had up there a couple of weeks back, you know, that's the kind of examples that, you know, our trade union movement should be looking to.
It's been interesting, certainly, having this conversation, James. I recall the long discussion, and there was a long discussion in this county in particular, with regards to school secretaries, who were in a situation where school secretaries employed directly by schools were on different contracts to others who were employed directly by the Department of Education. And it took, that was a long, long campaign, but they did eventually get the parity they needed. And I don't know, are they two analogous situations? But it was done through a mainstream union as well, but they did have their own sort of organisation as such. But would that be an analogous situation?
Yeah, sure, it would. It would, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think that that many school secretaries were, you know, particularly happy with the outcome of that. I mean, they did win. I think their campaign was a victory, but it didn't go as far, I think, as many school secretaries would have wanted, and that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in as well. You know, we have scored a victory. Yeah. You know, we forced the government to offer this contract and pay scale, you know, but that's not enough for us. You know, we do want more. We want parity. You know, we do the same work. We have full-time post-primary colleagues in further education and training who do exactly the same work as us. You know, we teach up to level 5 on the National Framework of Qualifications. Those courses are QQI accredited, therefore state sanctioned. You know, it's the state that has decided that we are qualified and experienced enough to teach those courses. The state has decided that. You know, so therefore, we should be treated accordingly. We should be treated the same as those people. And there is precedence for this. There are, because, you know, there are probably many adult education tutors who don't have teaching qualifications. But that's not to say that there aren't many who are highly, highly qualified. Many do have teaching qualifications, but it's the state that has decided by employing us and putting us in charge of courses that are up to level 5 on the NFQ and are state sanctioned because they're QQI accredited. I just wanted to make a point as well, if I could, just on a local issue, something that's local to Donegal, but not unique to Donegal. There are a number of ETBs, and Donegal is amongst them, that pay their tutors very poorly. I'm based in City of Dublin ETB, and Donegal tutors would be paid round about €10 an hour less than me and my colleagues in Dublin. And also Donegal ETB hasn't honoured the Building Momentum pay agreement. So that's the public pay agreement, and Donegal haven't honoured that. So the pay in Donegal, not only is it very, very poor, it's also not getting the increases which the government has said that they should get. Now, the ETBs, those ETBs who aren't paying the Building Momentum public pay agreement, they're saying that they need a department circular. They need a circular from the Department of Education in order to pay those increases. Our position would be, well, you know, you don't need a department circular to pay the lowest rate in the country. You know, you do that off your own bat. So, you know, you can very easily, without a department circular, pay the public pay agreement increases.
And the deal you're seeking would see equal pay across the country, and everyone, be they Donegal, be they Dublin, be they Limerick, be they Cork, be they Waterford, everyone paid the same.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But our Donegal colleagues who will be joining us tomorrow down outside the Doyle, you know, they'll also be demanding that when those Building Momentum pay increases are implemented in Donegal, that they should be backdated right back to day one.
James O'Keefe, Chair of the Adult Education Teachers Organisation, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, James. That's James there speaking to us from Dublin, as you heard. It's Donal Kavanagh standing in for Greg on the 9 till noon show on this Tuesday morning. And welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you on the show this morning. You can make contact with us. Text us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. Alternatively, you can use the phone. Call us on 074 91 25000. 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. Now, let's go to Zoom, because the Cathaoirleach of the Lifford Stranorer Municipal District announced last week that he would not be seeking re-election to Donegal County Council. I'm delighted to say that Councillor Liam Doherty joins us on Zoom. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me on there.
It's an absolute pleasure to speak to you, Liam. Liam, we did speak on news recently about this, and you were saying that you do believe it's time to bring some new blood into Donegal County Council, and you believe your stepping aside is going to facilitate that.
Yes, that'll be one of my main reasons. Just as I say, there's a lot of members there and other ones wanting to come on board and see what it's like to be a councillor. And I have 10 years done. I feel it's just time to step aside. I'm not getting no younger. Maybe we'll go on and become, you know, something else down the line for myself, you know. And just feel that 10 years is... there's a long enough stint at the moment, and
you were always a very hands-on member of council. As we reflected last week, you were never one for the speeches. You were never one for the big gesture. You're always one for getting the sleeves rolled up and the hands dirty.
Yes, Donal. Anyone knows me, that's me. I wasn't one for out to be heard on the radio or to be seen as such. You know, I was someone that done a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and as other councillors would know, the amount of work does go on behind the scenes that no one knows about or will ever know about, you know, personal stuff for people and stuff. That's just, I say that's me. And, you know, sometimes the meetings, you know, would go on and on, sometimes end up on a talking shop, and it just wasn't me, Donal. As I say, the meetings are just, you know, you don't have to be heard to be doing the work, you know. But no, I'm glad I was there for 10 years, and I'm happy that, you know, things went the way they did through the years for myself. Like, I was lucky, and I'm clear here at the moment there of this Stranorer Lifford Endy, and I'm honoured to have got that role, and it's been great working with all the other parties and our Endy. The six of us seemed to work, we worked very well together, and we brought a lot of issues and things to the table. And as I say, I think it's just time to move on now and let someone else take the reins for a while.
As you said, you've worked well with all the other parties, but you are and remain a committed member of Sinn Féin, and you've made it quite clear that if anyone thinks that Liam Doherty is not going to be on the campaign trail on behalf of Sinn Féin, they've got another thing coming.
Definitely not, Donal. As I say, even before going to the council, I was an active member there, and I will enjoy going around knocking on doors now again and getting the sleeves rolled up, as you said, and getting stuck into it again. I'm not going away. I'll be there. I'm not changing my phone number. I'm not disappearing into the mist. But no, I look forward to the campaign, and with new members coming along, with new candidates coming up there, it'll be great to be alongside of them and helping them with, you know, as they go along, you know.
It's going to be an interesting year in terms of elections, because we know at some point within the next 10 months we do have local and European elections in June. That's set in stone. But we know at some point over the next 12 months, and possibly sooner rather than later, we're going to have a general election as well. I mean, February 2025 is the absolute latest date it can be. But I mean, I think the general acceptance is the latest it's going to be is probably October of this year. Given the recent polls, given Sinn Féin's up and down performance in polls in the past while, it's going to be an interesting couple of months for the party, particularly as the party has made it quite clear this time it is going again for the three seats in Donegal and hopes to take them.
Yes, no doubt, Donal, and there's no reason why we can't take the three seats. And we will get a feel for it on the doors now in the local elections of what people's views are. And I think myself, people is angry at the moment and is, you know, annoyed the way things are going at the moment nationally. So I think we have a good chance. We have two great TDs there at the moment. We have a great councillors there doing the work on the ground, and hopefully after June we'll have more councillors on there. And I can't see, you know, people want change, and I think it's just time, and I think people should give Sinn Féin the chance when they have the calibre of the likes of Pearce and Padraic there already, is doing excellent work. I'd like to thank them as well for their help throughout the time in the council. There was never a time that you didn't phone some of them if there was more of a bigger issue or a national issue there that had to be dealt with, you know. So, no, I look forward to the locals to get, we'll get the feet on the ground and then hit the ground running again with the general.
The Lifford-Stranraer electoral area is an interesting one because all the other electoral areas have their own specific dedicated public services centre. Lifford-Stranraer doesn't. You use County House in Lifford because that happens to be within the geographical area. There was at one point a major discussion over whether Stranraer should get a PSC, but it didn't ever materialise. And it's an interesting one in that respect because sometimes we get, you know, you often hear talk about Donegal being the forgotten county. Sometimes members within Lifford-Stranraer seem to give the impression they believe that Lifford-Stranraer can be the forgotten municipal district at times.
And some stages, yes, we have some offices up around, and Stranraer, the other roads office and stuff. Yeah. There, we have them up there. But to me, Lifford is the main spot, the main office there. And I don't see why you wish. I think we're doing good. I think we're okay in the Stranraer Lifford. And there could be some things maybe tweaked here and there, but. Yeah. We do. I know different people see different things around roads, allocations for roads, money and stuff for roads. But you're dealing with it's Dublin, it's the government that, you know, will send the money down the road to us, and it's up to us to fight tooth and nail for the likes of that. But as far as offices, I think Lifford is good enough for us, and Lifford's an order. It's our main town, Lifford. No, I think we're doing all right there. As I say, we're getting caught up there eventually, I think there. So,
and the other thing, of course, is there is a very substantial part of the MD is part of the border. It backs onto right from the border at Lifford-Strabane right down toward Clady and beyond. And from that point of view, the border always has an impact on Lifford-Stranraer, and border relations between Lifford-Stranraer and that part of Tyrone have always been important and have always been a factor in discussions.
Yes, like you have that. There's a bit of an issue to a certain extent, but working with our own Sinn Féin colleagues, and Tyrone, like, you know, it's great as well, like we're all alone. And any issues that's appearing to be a cross-border issue there, we're in contact with them. They'll deal with it on their side, we'll deal with it on our side, and we meet regularly, and, you know, you kind of know what's going on there. But, yes, in a way, it does, you know, your road stops at the, you draw a line, and the road gets better maybe on one side and the other, and trying to deal with the two jurisdictions, it isn't ideal. Something that obviously we'd like to see not there, but to me, we deal with it with what we can, the way we can, with our colleagues over the fun, you know. So, no, I think it's good, you know.
Yeah, well, I know you did have a marathon meeting to discuss the county development plan over the past 2 weeks. I think that finished yesterday. That now goes back to public consultation with the idea that maybe the last plenary meeting before the elections will ratify that development plan. We'll see what happens in the meantime. But, you know, the meetings you'll be attending are drawing to a close, and from your point of view, that's going to be important. But, you know, as far as Liam Doherty is concerned, you have made it quite clear, you know, you're going to be on the campaign trail, you're going to be out there. Is it going to be a little bit easier on the campaign trail without it being yourself you're campaigning for, that you're going to be channeling your interest, be it campaigning for Gary Doherty or be it campaigning for whatever new candidates may crop up in I believe there's a section convention in 2 days' time. Whatever happens, you'll be out there.
Yeah, I'll be out there. And I said, well, I'm sure it will be a wee bit more breathing space, and it won't be, the same pressure won't be there. But the excitement will be there, I think, and the drive will be there to elect. We'll be running three candidates on the MD this time. Mm-hmm. And the big push will be there to get them three candidates in. And as I say, then we'll be heading into a general election then. So it's exciting times more than anything. And I think, yes, as you say, I think the pressure won't be the same pressure on myself, but at the same time, you know, it's it's hard as well, not campaigning for yourself as such, you know, but well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, we wish you all the best. I would say happy retirement, but I won't, because I know the sort you are, and the sort you are is you'll be out there doing as much work, I suspect, after June as you've been doing before June. It'll just be slightly different kind of work, but I've no doubt you'll be out there. Liam, thanks very much indeed, and we wish you all the best.
No, thank you, Don. And I'd just like to take this opportunity also to thank my constituents at Exeter, Texas, and the messages on Facebook and stuff there, that the kind words from everyone and council staff as well there. And my team, the councillors there, the 10 of us was in the council, it was a great working with the 10 of us, worked well together. And I'd like to also thank them as well publicly here. Just, you know.
Liam, all the best. Thanks very much indeed.
Okay, Don. Thanks very much.
Take care. I want to tell you about a little competition that's going to run on the show for the rest of this week, courtesy of the Holyrood Hotel in Bundoran. There's a one-night bed and breakfast for two people at the Holyrood, champagne and chocolates on arrival, followed by a spa treatment in the luxurious spa at Orchids. Finish off your evening with a four-course dinner and a bottle of wine in the Watermelon Restaurant. Full use of the Blue River Leisure Centre swimming pool and Canadian hot tub. The spa experience includes a private session in the outdoor hot tub and sauna and a 60-minute spa treatment, each inspired to give you a captivating night's sleep, beginning with a serene back massage followed by a beautifully soothing scalp hand and arm massage. That sounds lovely. To be honest, with a chance to win this fantastic prize, just answer this question. And it is a question which hopefully won't give you too much difficulty. What city is often called the City of Love and is home to iconic sites such as the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame Cathedral? Which city is often called the City of Love? It's home to iconic sites such as the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame Cathedral. Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000 to be in with a chance of winning. That's your answer and your name and address to 086 60 25,000, and please text your answers to that number. Now, you'll have heard on the news with Michaela this morning, and indeed with Don Marie and Michaela all day yesterday, that Donegal County Council have been meeting in session to discuss the county development plan, and there's been a lot of minutia discussed over the course of that. To tease out some of this and discuss the importance of the plan and these discussions, I'm joined on Zoom by John McAteer, the editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. John, good to talk to you.
And to you, Donald. Good morning to you.
And a very good morning to you. I didn't get to Lifford for the discussion this time. I was there for all the discussions on the Letterkenny plan, and I was there for the initial discussions on the county development plan. The meeting that started last week and finished yesterday. I mean, I'd say in total there was close to 16, 17 hours of discussion in total on the chief executive's report. Now, what's basically happened is a draft plan was published last year. It goes out to consultation. Members of the public locally will make comments. There'll also be comments from people like Antashka, people like the Chamber, people like other bodies that may have an interest, be they angling groups, be they whatever, will make comments, or local environmental groups and so on. And then the Office of the Public Regulator, or the Planning Regulator, the OPR, makes observations. And all this goes into a report that the Chief Executive, John McLaughlin, puts together. He presents his report, and what's basically been discussed over the past two meetings has been that Chief Executive's report. It can be mind-numbingly boring at times because it gets into real minutia and there can be long protracted discussion over 2 acres. From what you saw of the proceedings online, John, or whatever, how do you think those last two meetings went?
They were very busy meetings. They were very detailed meetings, and you said that the minutia of it had to be hammered out and will continue to be hammered out, because we covered this originally on the 7th of December when we highlighted the fact that the OPR was going to curb rural housing and access on the N56. Now, the N56 stretches from the mountaintop in Letterkenny to Killybegs. It's 100 miles. Access roads off that outside of main population centres. The OPR is looking at the potential that if you're going to build a new cattle shed and you have 3 extra cows, that if you bring them to the mart or the factory or wherever, it's going to cause traffic congestion. It's one of those layers that stretches away, way back, and you remember this quite well. Excuse me. the famous planning tribunals that were established to recommend or made recommendations to look at certain planning matters and payment. And that was in 1997. It was initially the Flood Tribunal, and then it was the Mahon Tribunal. Yep. Lasted for 12 years. Talk about a long meeting yesterday. It cost over €300 million. But, I mean, for the context of this debate, I think Liam Blaney put this thing into very strong context last week when he said that he expressed very serious concerns that the type of directives coming from the Office of the Planning Regulator were going to make it virtually impossible for people to build houses in rural areas. And he just warned that the council had to take a stand now, or otherwise there would be no rural housing happening at all by 2030. And if you only sort of try and visualise that, that rural Ireland, which should be treated as our most vital asset and promoted as such, is being handled in such a negative, restrictive way, more rules, more plans. And, I mean, who's putting out these things? I mean, we have two elements here. We have a government in Dublin trying to promote rural development and rural culture and all that goes with that. And here, you know, we have this extra layer on top of the planning laws, which are pretty archaic at the moment because you could be waiting a very long time. I mean, God help any young couple trying to look for planning permission out in the countryside.
And the point's been made that certainly there are parts of the N56 where bringing new access on would cause congestion. There are parts of the N56 where bringing in access on would potentially be very dangerous. But the reality is there are large parts of the N56 where that would not be the case. And, you know, no one knows an area better than the local council and the local planning authority. And really, maybe the point that this was the point made by Martin Harry when we spoke to him between the two meetings, when he said, look, yeah, there are issues where there are matters of road safety and matters of congestion, etc. But there are areas where they're not. And there needs to be more leeway. There needs to be more autonomy given to the local planning authority. And a catch-all ban right across a 100km stretch of road is not the way to be going.
Is that not a matter for Transport Infrastructure Ireland?
It's TII, it's the council, it is TII, but in terms of the council, you have the planning permission on the land
itself. One layer of bureaucracy on top of the other. The reality here is what we're talking about this morning. Can young people build houses anymore on the family farm? Yeah. This is effectively stating that because there's from my recollection of reading it before Christmas time, being a blood relative doesn't necessarily give you the right to build on the family farm. I think it does. I think everybody should have a right to build on the, not on the family farm, but in the rural countryside, with the most basic of minimum regulations to encourage those people to come back, build a house, live in rural Ireland, rear children, keep the schools going. Because like, if we're going to allow this here to happen as it now is, schools are going to be severely impacted, health centres are going to be impacted, community groups are going to be impacted, the whole development of the area. Let it be in construction, let it be in housing, let it be in any other aspect of rural life. There's going to be layer upon layer of bureaucracy. You could paraphrase the late John Healy, the legendary John Healy of the Irish Times. Why in the hell is nobody shouting stop to all of this? We carry on.
But John, the reality is you and I would have been attending meetings in the 1990s. Where this exact discussion took place. This issue over people can't build on the local family farm and people can't live in their own areas, and as a result, there's a throwback on the local school and on the local GAA club and on the local community. That discussion was being held 30 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about planning regulations being too slow 30 years ago. They've probably got much worse ever since that, because young people face nightmares, they face costs, they face so much regulation and so much further information sought, it could be years before they could actually start building their house. That would need to be removed instead of adding more chaos to it. And this is where we're going and this is what's happening. But, I mean, does it not reflect to a great extent that rural Ireland, you know, bureaucracy is driving the whole heart out of rural Ireland? It's driving a stake right through the heart of any further development on the rural countryside.
And you have the added fear as well now that because they're talking about the viability of local urban areas, that the fear now is that what's going to become an issue is that, you know, people are going to be told, no, you can't build on the family farm because there's room in the nearest town, there's still capacity in the nearest town 10km away. And what we want to do is make sure that the nearest town 10km away is full before we start building in the country. So that's going to be another issue, and that's come in the past while.
councils and the departments should be promoting rural development rather than hindering it. I mean, why should people want to live in the nearest village 10 kilometres away? What, I mean, I think that's absolutely preposterous, because the reality is there's plenty of wide open spaces right out in the heart of rural Ireland. I'm just looking out my window here in Fannet at the most wonderful morning and wonderful landscape. Mm-hmm. And we could have more houses out there. We could have more people living there. And, you know, and instead of opposing everything to do with rural Ireland and one-off housing, that should be treated as a positive thing, and that should be promoted, and that should be incentivized, and that people should be given the go-ahead within 3 to 4 months of applying for planning permission, rather than waiting for maybe years and years and years in some cases. Rural Ireland is going that way. Politics and officialdom is also going that way. Any issues that arise, create another committee and another juggernaut amongst the hundreds of committees that are out there and official bodies. I see this as highly detrimental, and I would like to think that every council in Donegal County Council will be totally opposed to it, and will state that when this comes back to the public consultation. I do know that the first public consultation attracted, I think, about 286 complaints or observations, call them what you like. It's not half enough, because rural communities with their local organisations will be decimated if this goes through. And that's the bottom line, aren't you know?
Well, it's going to be back to public consultation in the coming weeks with the idea of a decision made by May just before the local elections. We'll be keeping an eye on this one with interest. In the meantime, John McAteer, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Maybe it's time for people to start making submissions that aren't complaining, but actually backing the council and backing the provisions, particularly those which are going against the OPR. It's going to be an interesting debate. We watch with interest. John McAteer, as ever, thank you very much indeed.